Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Danielle Lazarova and we begin with the news. The three parties in the Czech governing coalition have so far failed to agree on the setup of a new cabinet which would break the political stalemate in the Czech Republic. The governing parties are looking to end months of political instability sparked by a scandal over the Prime Minister's private finances by negotiating the setup of a new semi-caretaker government under a different Prime Minister. They have so far failed to agree on two important issues, the division of ministerial posts and whether the new government should be formed on the basis of a full coalition agreement or a one-off deal as proposed by the Social Democrats. The Christian Democratic Party has refused to consider a one-off deal for fear that it would not provide enough guarantees against possible future cooperation between the Social Democrats and the Communists. The talks are expected to continue on Wednesday. Meanwhile, President Klaus has urged the coalition parties to speed up the process of finding a solution to the ongoing political crisis. He said a solution should be found within hours, not days or weeks, and urged all parties involved to focus on the main goal and be prepared to make concessions. The president said that if the coalition parties failed to reach agreement soon, he would be forced to take what he called radical action. The Spanish telecoms giant Telefónica has bought a majority stake in Český Telecom. Under a contract signed in Prague on Tuesday, Telefónica will pay the Czech government 82.6 billion crowns for its 51.1% shares in the company. The government will use the revenue to finance social and environmental projects, cover the losses of the bailout agency Česká konsolidační agentura, and kick off the pension reform. Emergency workers and police from five European countries, including the Czech Republic, on Tuesday staged the explosion of a train carrying hazardous materials in order to test the coordination of EU disaster response networks. Belgium, the Czech Republic, Germany and Italy joined France for Eurotech 2005, an exercise simulating the derailing and subsequent explosion of a train carrying toxic chemicals in close proximity to a housing community and a passenger train. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. Wednesday is expected to be partly cloudy with some rain and day temperatures between 13 and 17 degrees Celsius. I'm Danielle Lazarova and that's the end of the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague's English Language Service and today, President Václav Klaus urges the country to vote against the European Constitution. The Czech state finally closes one of the country's biggest privatization deals ever. And we'll also be talking to the new head of the Academy of Sciences and hearing from Matěj Černý of the humanitarian aid organization People in Need. I'm Dita Asiru, stay tuned. If the European Constitution fails to get approved, nothing earth-shattering will happen. In fact, we'll have a flourishing European Union. The fewer such documents, the better. Words with which President Václav Klaus launched his latest literary work, A Guide to the European Constitution. Daniela Lazarová has the story.
The slim booklet, which has appeared on bookshelves around the country, is titled Say Yes or No to the European Constitution. The words Say No to the EU Constitution are highlighted, leaving no one in any doubt regarding the president's advice. Václav Klaus is one of the harshest critics of the EU Constitution, the document intended to smooth the running of an expanded European Union. He said at the book launch that this book was his way of initiating public dialogue on the issue and warning readers about the pitfalls involved. Predicting criticism from the media, he insisted that this was not a case of scaremongering.
Někteří pořád hrají s nálepkami.
There are those who like to stick labels on us, such as Euro-optimist, Euro-pessimist or Euro-skeptic. I ask you not to do this. We who are concerned about what's happening in Europe today refuse to accept the labels Euro-pessimist or Euro-skeptic. It's precisely because we're optimists that we're striving to make sure that the European continent has the best possible future, that we Europeans have the best possible future.
Maximálně snažíme, aby to s tímto kontinentem a s námi všemi dopadlo co nejlépe.
The president's guidebook has aroused anger in government circles, especially since the ailing government, which is strongly pro-European integration, has not yet launched its own information campaign on the EU constitution. 200 million crowns have been earmarked for the project, but in view of the current government crisis, it is not clear when or even whether the campaign will happen. Up to now, all three parties in the government have supported the idea of a national referendum on the EU constitution. But Jan Kohout, the man who is widely expected to become the country's next prime minister, has unexpectedly hinted that if time runs short, it might be more expedient for the EU constitution simply to be ratified by parliament. The only drawback to this emergency scenario is that, according to a recent survey, the majority of Czechs would prefer to have their own say on this crucial matter regarding their future. According to the same survey, most Czechs know next to nothing about the EU constitution. What President Klaus can smile about is that the only source of information currently on the market is his own guidebook.
Thanks, Daniela. One of the biggest privatization deals since the fall of communism has been signed and sealed. The Spanish Telefonica now owns a 51% stake in Český Telecom, the Czech fixed-line operator, which also owns the Czech Republic's leading mobile operator, Eurotel. In an open tender, where the only criterion was the price offered, Telefonica beat Swisscom and Belgacom with an offer of over $3.5 billion. One analyst described the deal, at a good 25% higher than expected, as nothing less than a bomb. David Vaughan has just come back from the signing ceremony.
Hodně štěstí jak novým vlastníkům, tak i všem klientům a uživatelům, kteří budou využívat služeb Českého Telekomu.
Yes, Dieter, it was a beautiful bright day at the Liechtenstein Palace down by the river on Prague's Lesser Quarter. And there are also smiles all around, including, at least from time to time, the beleaguered Czech Prime Minister, Stanislav Gross, who had gone to the trouble of going down there to be there in person to thank Telefonica for their investment, which is what we've just heard. And I think the smiles were very much in place because Telefonica, which is one of the world's major players, has gained a firm foothold in the Central European market thanks to this deal. And the Czech government can breathe a massive sigh of relief. Not only have the state coffers been boosted by far more than had been expected, but also the beleaguered Czech government did manage to survive long enough to see the deal actually happen. And in fact, the Prime Minister, Stanislav Gross, couldn't resist a dig at his former political allies in the government, saying that he wished that they could have been as reliable as his partners in Telefonica. The president of Telefonica, César Alietra Isuel, was equally full of praise.
No es la primera vez que Telefonica acude a una privatización. Y desde nuestra experiencia puedo asegurarles...
Well, he was, of course, speaking in Spanish, and he said that Telefonica has plenty of experience of privatizations, and in this case it couldn't have been more transparent or more smooth. And so it's interesting as well that this is really the first really big Spanish investment in the Czech Republic since the fall of communism.
So now that Telefonica has taken over, what's going to happen next?
Well, now it's down to the hard work after all the smiles and sunshine. From now on, Telefonica has executive power to make all strategic decisions in Český Telecom. Under the deal, it will now have to come up with an offer for the remaining 49% of stock in the company. This could cost another $3.5 billion, so this will put Telefonica's balance sheet under quite a lot of pressure. But obviously, they think it's worthwhile.
What about economists or analysts? Do they agree?
By and large, I think they do. Telefonica is a renowned firm. It has a great deal of experience in marketing, in launching new products, and also with the key so-called third-generation mobile phone technology. It's also fully embraced Telecom's own strategy, logically, of trying to expand further into the region to include Poland, Hungary, and Slovakia. But I suppose if there is a shadow over the whole deal, the Czech market itself does seem to be getting close to saturation point with over 100% mobile penetration. So Telefonica will have to do some pretty active and energetic marketing, I think, and come up with some good new products.
Now, of course, what most of us want to know is what will the Czech government do with this huge windfall of $3.5 billion over 80 billion Czech crowns?
Well, if the current government does manage to survive in one form or another, we won't have early elections, it will put most of the money into the transport infrastructure. Some of it will also go to improving the environment and a smaller percentage into developing housing. The opposition right of centre civic democrats don't like that, and they would like to see the money go primarily into dramatic pension reforms.
Okay, so the deal is signed and sealed. Is that it?
Not quite. It does also have to be approved by the European Commission and by the Czech Anti-Monopolies Office.
David Vaughan, thanks very much for that.
Thank you.
Now, as any visitor to the city will know, tourism is an absolutely huge industry in the Czech capital of Prague. Millions of people from all around the world visit the city every year, almost 3.5 million in 2004, according to figures just released by Czech Tourism. Prague was the 6th most visited city in Europe last year, with the greatest number of tourists coming from the United Kingdom. Ian Willoughby has more.
Prague continues to be one of the most popular cities in Europe, coming behind only London, Paris, Rome, Madrid and Berlin in terms of the number of foreign visitors last year. And what's more, that number is growing, says Czech Tourism in a new report. But there's been a change in where those tourists are coming from. After many years in which the greatest number of visitors came from Germany, in 2004 they were overtaken by the British, almost 600,000 of whom visited the City of 1,000 Spires. This change has been attributed to the wide availability of cheap flights to Prague from many British cities. The Germans remain in second place, followed by the Italians, with over 300,000 visitors. The 3.5 million tourists who came to Prague last year accounted for around 60% of the total for the whole of the Czech Republic. And when it comes to the country as a whole, German tourists remain in front. Almost 2 million of them visited this country in 2004. And, says Czech Tourism, overall visits increased by around 20% last year. When it comes to individual destinations, the second most popular, the West Bohemian spa town of Karlovy Vary, lags a long way behind Prague, with almost 400,000 visitors in total.
Ian Willoughby. Now it's time for Czech Science, in which this week we meet the new president of the Czech Academy of Sciences, Professor Václav Bacses. The former head of the Institute of Molecular Genetics, he replaces Professor Helena Ilnerová, who helmed the academy for 4 years. As his four-year term began, Professor Bacses discussed the perennial problem of lack of finances with Pavla Horáková.
We, of course, face this problem also because of the exchange rate of the Czech crown. You realize that, for instance, a grant of 1 million crown is a reasonable grant in the Czech Republic, but it's very, very low grant in terms of euro or the American dollar. And it is very important to realize that we are working on the international market, so to say, because all we have to buy chemicals, for instance, and instruments, we buy abroad. There is another problem that is associated with this, and that are very low salaries, especially salaries for young scientists. They, of course, always have the possibility and chance to go abroad. And we are losing, really, young, talented scientists. What I think is needed to do is, first of all, to find money to raise their salary so that they can live decent lives, they can start their families, they can have apartments and so on. And then, of course, to make for them space, so to say, to return to decent working conditions.
You have been also quoted as saying that English should be spoken more widely in Czech research institutions. Do you mean that foreign scientists should come to the Czech Republic?
My experience, especially from the United States, where you see in the laboratories very few Americans, in fact. There are many Indians, many Chinese, many Russians, also some Czechs, and so on and so forth. And they all, of course, speak English. English is today a language of science. And what I meant was to attract more foreigners so that our laboratories and our institutes would be more international.
You also speak much in favor of basic research, which doesn't seem to be very popular these days. Why?
Well, this is the question of what is the standing of Academy of Sciences? What is its mission within the Czech society or within the Czech science? And I think that every cultural nation has to contribute to the basic results of science. We are a cultural nation, and so we also have to share our responsibility in this respect. And Academy of Sciences was founded exactly with this mission, exactly to do what we call basic research. What is the best thing that we can offer to the society? It is the initiative and invention of individuals. And once there would be funding of projects that would be forcefully connected with immediate applications, this initiative and this invention would be somehow restricted. Of course, what is the best result? The best result is if there is something that is applicable. But our experience teaches us that usually or exclusively these very good, economically good results usually stem from the basic research. Take the lenses of Otto Wichterle. Take the virostatics of Antonín Holý. I worked with Antonín Holý for many years, so I know that he, before he was successful with his virostatics, for tens of years he was doing basic research, and only after that he could build up on these results to bring something so beautiful and so excellent as are the virostatics.
The new president of the Czech Academy of Sciences, Professor Václav Bačes, there talking to Pavla Horáková in Czech Science. You tune to Radio Prague, and Rob Cameron joins us now with One on One.
Welcome to this week's One on One. This week, with a representative of the Czech Republic's best-known humanitarian aid organization, People in Need. People in Need is involved in campaigns in various countries around the globe, such as Chechnya, Afghanistan, and most recently Cuba. With me is Matej Černý from that organization. Matej, welcome to One on One. Tell me a little bit, for the listeners who don't know about it, exactly what People in Need is.
Well, People in Need is not only a humanitarian organization. We do lots of projects, not only abroad. And the Cuba project is not the most recent one, as you said. The most recent one is the one that goes on right now in Asia, after the tsunami wave. And we also work in the country, in the Czech Republic, especially social programs with the Roma population. As I said, we also work abroad. That's what we are most known for. In Afghanistan, we've been to Kosovo, to Bosnia, and stuff. So the scope is really, really large.
And it's also built up a pretty high profile, hasn't it? So certainly in this country, as an organization which is helping people in various difficult situations around the world.
Yes, the floods that have been in the Czech Republic 2 years ago really helped, because the people could actually feel the help that was coming. You know, there was a huge solidarity among the people with the fellow citizens who were somehow affected by floods, and they were sending money to lots of humanitarian organizations. But we received, I guess, the largest amount of money, and we did help. It happened to me last year. I was working for the One World Film Festival, which is a documentary film festival organized by People in Need, and as a production manager. And it happened to me, I need to transport something, so I ordered a truck. And then we loaded the truck, and then we came to our offices to unload it, and then I said to this driver, okay, how shall I pay you? And he said, well, you're People in Need. I don't want any money from you. I was like, no, it's not possible. No, you helped me so much in the flood. And he almost broke down in tears, and it was so moving. And this kind of thing happens to you a lot when you're working for People in Need.
It must be an extremely satisfying feeling. Tell me about you then. What led you to get involved with the organization?
Well, it was basically by accident. You know, I was working for the Kalvari International Film Festival for like 5 or 6 years. And then I took a job translating a book. You know, I was sitting for like 4 months at home at a computer, looking at a screen, have no contact with the people. And after I finished it, I struggled to get a job to work with people. And since I was working for the Kalevari Film Festival, then I knew some people who were at a One World Film Festival. So that's how I came to people in India. I didn't came actually to people in India, I came to One World.
Tell me about your working day, your average working day. What kind of things do you do throughout the day?
Well, it depends what you do. I mean, when working on the festival, there were several things. Doing fundraising, was calling. I was doing the private sector fundraising. So you basically sit at a desk and trying to call people, sending them emails, explaining them what the One World Film Festival is, and ask them for money and ask them for a meeting, which is a problem. Then sometimes you get the feeling that those people who are supposed to be marketing managers of the big company, they actually don't exist because you can't get them on the phone.
So how do you get past the secretaries? What's your method of getting to the people who have their fingers on the purses, as it were?
Well, I keep calling them. You know, trying to actually to bother them, to disturb them by calling them. And once you get them on the phone, then you have to somehow use your whatever charm, wit, to persuade them to meet you personally, which sometimes happens and sometimes obviously not.
So what would you say is your greatest success so far in your work with people in need?
I guess the symbolic gesture, which we did on Václav Square.
This was for the Cuban dissidents?
Yes, this was for the Cuban dissidents. We built a symbolic jail cell on Wenceslas Square, and we, for 18 hours, we are holding people who were willing to sit there, symbolically to sit for the Cuban dissidents, and people who attended this was politicians, actors, well-known personalities from the Czech society, including the former national hockey team coach, Slavomir Lenar, who is a really known person in this country.
Czechs are often described as rather xenophobic. Do you think that's true? And does that affect your, say, fundraising activities? Is it hard to get Czechs to give money to foreigners?
Well, regarding Cuba, not. I mean, you know, it's hard for me to answer this question. You know, if you look at the wave of support after the tsunami wave in Asia this year, it was even bigger than after the floods, which actually happened in this country. And this happened abroad. Thanks to the media attention and to all the pictures of the struggling people, it was huge. And it is satisfying.
Often the criticism leveled at charities and humanitarian aid organizations is that what they do is basically a drop in the ocean. They help patch up problems or provide a temporary solution to problems which could be solved straight away by governments. If a government decided to put the money and the energy that an organization like People in Need does to address that to a situation, then the situation would be resolved, and that small NGOs like yourselves can only have a kind of cosmetic effect and can only change things very, very slightly. How would you address that criticism?
Well, firstly, I'm not expert on humanitarian aid, but what I know is that there is a rather new approach towards humanitarian aid, and it's not only giving people like clothes and food and then leave, but trying to focus on the development projects. So it is that you give the people some money or means to actually get their life together and to stand on their feet.
So to provide them with the means to support themselves, in other words.
Yes, exactly, and to build their lives again and their businesses and whatever they do.
And the political side of what you do, say, for example, with Cuba, even though you've had some fairly high-profile campaigns, Castro's still there, dissidents are still in prison, you've raised awareness for a short period of time, but no doubt it'll begin to slip from people's minds again. So isn't that quite frustrating, not being able to have more of a direct effect on a situation such as Cuba?
Well, how do you know that it will slip away and that we raised attention for a while? We will keep struggling and we'll keep, you know, doing this and in several ways, either these symbolic jail cells, or you can have photo exhibitions. You can show documentaries about Cuba. There are several ways how to do it. You can write to the newspapers and keep people aware. Regarding the fact that Castro's still there, yes, that's true, but, you know, you can't think when doing this that you do something and the point of your interest, which is Castro, just disappears. It's not possible. I mean, you're doing small thing to help, and you hope it will help in one day, and you never know when. When the Velvet Revolution came to this country, I mean, there was there was a demonstration where Havel stood up and said, I mean, if somebody told me 2 months ago that I'd be standing on a demonstration that actually approved by the authorities, I would think that the person is crazy. And after this demonstration, there was a revolution and the whole regime collapsed. So the same thing might happen in Kuga, and hopefully one day it will.
Mate, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
And Rob's guest in One-on-One was Matěj Černý of the humanitarian aid organization People in Need. And we've reached the end of this Radio Prague program. Thanks for joining us today, and be sure to tune in for more from Radio Prague soon. Now, for a review of our older programs, visit our website at www.radio.cz/English, where you'll also find most of our reports transcribed and, of course, available in sound. And you'll also find out more about the Radio Prague competition, where you'll be able to win a trip to Prague for two. And in case you have any questions or comments, please send us either an email to english@radio.cz or write us a letter to Vinohradská 12, 12099, Prague 2 in the Czech Republic. I'm Dita Asiedu. Thanks for joining us. Goodbye and take care.